In the dark of night, one light still yet burns. Frightened fingers tremble as brittle pages turn. Fireside Mystery Theater presents The Midnight Reading, a special series of dramatic recitations of dark masterpieces in miniature by the masters of the macabre. Good evening, I'm Ali Silva. What on this menu is local? We live in a time now that, when it comes to the things we consume, more and more people want to know exactly where their fruits, their vegetables, even their beers and liquors come from. The British author and poet Robert Graves may have anticipated the locavore movement by more than 60 years, as you'll learn in the story you're about to hear. If you are one who insists that your night terrors be fresh and crisp, and harvested with a wicked integrity, we'd like to offer you this, the ultimate in farm-to-table dining. By all means, work up your appetite for this sketchy little sketch by Robert Graves called Earth to Earth. Here to read it for you is the otherworldly but organically talented Mary Murphy.
Yes, yes, and yes. Don't get me wrong, for goodness sake. I am heart and soul with you. I agree that man is wickedly defrauding the Earth Mother of her ancient dues by not putting back into the soil as much nourishment as he takes out, and that modern plumbing is, if you like, a running sore in the body politic, and that municipal incinerators are genocidal rather than germicidal, and that cremation should be made a capital crime, and that dust bowls created by the greedy plough. Yes, yes, and yes again. But Elsie and Roland Hedge. She, a book illustrator. He, an architect with suspect lungs. Had been warned against Dr. Eugen Steinpilz. He'll bring you no luck, I told them. My little finger says so decisively.
You too?
Asked Elsie indignantly. This was at Brixham, South Devon, in March 1940.
I suppose you think that because of his foreign accent and his beard he must be a spy.
No, I said coldly. That point hadn't occurred to me, but I won't contradict you. The very next day, Elsie deliberately picked a friendship. I don't like the phrase, but that's what she did, with the doctor. An Alsatian with an American passport, who described himself as a nature philosoph, and both she and Roland were soon immersed in Steinpilzery up to the nostrils. It began when he invited them to lunch and gave them cold meat and two rival sets of vegetable dishes. Potatoes baked, carrots creamed, bought from the local fruiterer, and potatoes baked and carrots creamed, grown uncompassed in his own garden. The superiority of the latter over the former in appearance, size, and especially flavour, came as an eye-opener to Elsie and Roland. Yes and yes, I know just how they felt. Why shouldn't I? When I visit the market here in Palmer, I always refuse La Torre potatoes, because they are raised for the early English market, and therefore reek of imported chemical fertilizer. Instead, I buy Sonsardno potatoes, which taste as good as the ones we used to get in England 50 years ago. The reason is that the Sonsardno farmers manure their fields with Palmer kitchen refuse, still available by the cartload, this being too backward a city to afford effective modern methods of destroying it. Thus Dr. Steinpilz converted the childless and devoted couple to the Steinpilz method of composting. It did not, as a matter of fact, vary greatly from the methods you read about in the gardening notes of your favourite national newspaper, except that it was far more violent. Dr. Steinpilz had invented a formula for producing extremely fierce bacteria, capable, Roland claimed, of breaking down an old boot or the family Bible or a torn woolen vest into a beautiful black hummus almost as she watched. The formula could not be bought, however. It might be communicated under oath of secrecy only to members of the Eugen Steinpilz Fellowship, which I refused to join. I won't pretend, therefore, to know the formula myself. But one night I overheard Elsie and Roland arguing in their garden as to whether the planetary influences were favourable, and they also mentioned a ram's horn in which, it seems, a complicated mixture of triturated animal and vegetable products, technically called the mother, was to be cooked up. I gather also that a bull's foot and a goat's pancreas were part of the works, because Mr. Pook the butcher afterwards told me that he had been puzzled by Roland's request for these unusual cuts. Milkwort and pennyroyal and bee orchid and vetch certainly figured among the mother's herbal ingredients. I recognised these one day in a gardening basket Elsie had left at the post office. The hedges soon had their first compost heap cooking away in the garden, which was about the size of a tennis court, and consisted mostly of well-kept lawn. Dr. Steinpilz, who supervised, now began to haunt the cottage like the smell of drains. I had to give up calling on them. Then after the fall of France, Brixham became a war zone, whence everyone but we British and our free French or free Belgians allies were extruded. Consequently, Dr. Steinpilz had to leave, which he did with very bad grace, and was killed in a Liverpool air raid the day before he should have sailed back to New York. But that was far from closing the ledger. I think Elsie must have been in love with the doctor, and certainly Roland had hero worship for him. They treasured a signed collection of all his esoteric books, each called after a different semi-precious stone, and used to read them out aloud to each other at meals, in turns. Then to show that this was a practical philosophy, not just a random assemblage of beautiful thoughts about nature, they began composting in a deeper and even more religious way than before. The lawn had come up, of course, but they used the sods to sandwich layers of kitchen waste, which they mixed with the scrapings from an abandoned pigsty, 2 barrowfuls of sodden poplar leaves from the recreation ground, and a sack of rotten turnips. Looking over the hedge, I caught the fanatic gleam in Elsie's eye as she turned the hungry bacteria loose on the heap, and could not repress a premonitory shudder. So far, not too bad, perhaps. But when serious bombing started, and food became so scarce that housewives were fined for not making over their swill to the national pigs, Elsie and Roland grew worried. Having already abandoned their ordinary sanitary system and built an earth closet in the garden, they now tried to convince neighbours of their duty to do the same, even at the risk of catching cold and getting spiders down the neck. Elsie also sent Roland after the slow-moving Red Devon cows, as they lurched home along the lane at dusk to rescue the precious droppings with a kitchen shovel, while she visited the local ash dump with a packing case mounted on wheels and collected whatever she found there of an organic nature. Dead cats, old rags, withered flowers, cabbage stalks, and such household waste as even a national wartime pig would have coughed at. She also saved every drop of their bathwater for sprinkling the heaps, because it contained, she said, valuable animal salts. The test of a good compost heap, as every illuminant knows, is whether a certain revolting-looking, if beneficial, fungus sprouts from it. Elsie's heaps were grey with this crop, and so hot inside that they could be used for hay box cookery, which must have saved her a deal of fuel. I call them Elsie's heaps, because she now considered herself Dr. Steinpilz's earthly delegate, and loyal Roland did not dispute this claim. A critical stage in the story came during the Blitz. It will be remembered that trainloads of Londoners, who had been evacuated to South Devon when war broke out, thereafter de-evacuated and re-evacuated and re-de-evacuated themselves from time to time in a most disorganized fashion. Elsie and Roland, as it happened, escaped having evacuees billeted on them because they had no spare bedroom. But one night, an old naval pensioner came knocking at their door and demanded lodging for the night. Having been burned out of Plymouth, where everything was chaos, he had found himself walking away and blundering along in a daze until he fetched up here, hungry and deadbeat. They gave him a meal and bedded him on the sofa. But when Elsie came down in the morning to fork over the heaps, she found him dead of heart failure. Roland broke a long silence by coming, in some embarrassment, to ask my advice. Elsie, he said, had decided that it would be wrong to trouble the police about the case, because the police were so busy these days, and the poor old fellow had claimed to possess neither kith nor kin. So they had read the burial service over him, and after removing his belt buckle, trouser buttons, metal spectacle case, and a bunch of keys, which were irreducible, had laid him reverently in the new compost heap. Its other contents, he added, were a cartload of waste from the cider factory, salvaged cow dung, and several basketfuls of hedge clippings. Had they done wrong? If you mean will I report you to the civil authorities, the answer is no, I assured him. I wasn't looking over the hedge at the relevant hour, and what you tell me is only hearsay. Roland shambled off, satisfied. The war went on. Not only did the hedges convert the whole garden into serried rows of Jugendsteinpilz memorial heaps, leaving no room for planting the potatoes or carrots to which the compost had been prospectively devoted, but they scavenged the offal from the Brixham fish market and salvaged the contents of the bin outside the surgical ward at the cottage hospital. Every spring, I remember, Elsie used to pick big bunches of primroses and put them straight on the compost, without even a last wistful sniff. Virgin primroses were supposed to be particularly relished by the fierce bacteria. Here the story becomes a little painful for members, say, of a family reading circle. I will soften it as much as possible. One morning a policeman called on the hedges with a summons, and I happened to see Roland peep anxiously out of the bedroom window, but quickly pull his head in again. The policeman rang and knocked and waited, then tried the back door, and presently went away. The summons was for a blackout offence, but apparently the hedges did not know this. Next morning he called again, and when nobody answered, forced the lock of the back door. They were found dead in bed together, having taken an overdose of sleeping tablets. A note on the coverlet ran simply, "Please lay our bodies on the heap nearest the pigsty. Flowers by request. Strew some on the bodies, mixed with a little kitchen waste, and then fork the earth lightly over. E.H.R.H. George Irks, the new tenant, proposed to grow potatoes and dig for victory. He hired a cart and began throwing the compost into the River Dart. "Not liking the look of them toadstools," as he subsequently explained. The five beautifully clean human skeletons, which George unearthed in the process, were still awaiting identification when the war ended. ¶¶
That was Mary Murphy reading Earth to Earth by Robert Graves. Perhaps you'd like to take a little more time to fully digest the story you just heard, Or maybe not. We should also mention that this tale directly inspired one of our own original plays, It's in the Post. You can find it in Fireside Mystery Theater's podcast, Episode 13, Feast of Fear, 2015. We highly recommend serving it up as a second course. We also highly recommend that you explore more of the work of Robert Graves, especially the books for which he is best remembered, I, Claudius, and its sequel, Claudius the God, which are some of the finest examples of historical fiction ever published. The 1976 BBC miniseries adaptation is also excellent. You'll find more than enough intrigue, suspense, and overall ghastliness to satisfy even the most depraved of you listeners out there. Oh, you know who you are. The Midnight Reading is produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and me for Fireside Mystery Productions. Our audio engineer is Wayne Silver, and our series was recorded at the Ice Plant Studio in New York City. I edited and supervised post-production. This summer's collection was curated and our series written by Sylvan Sandovar. Our theme music is by Martina Da Silva. Be sure not to miss any installment of The Midnight Reading by subscribing to the Fireside Mystery Theater podcast feed on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. A rating and review on iTunes would be most valued and appreciated. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, where our handle is @FiresideMystery. You can further support our passion for creating deliciously dark audio entertainment by becoming an FMT Patreon patron. Visit patreon.com/firesidemysterytheater for details. This is Ali Silva, strongly encouraging you to explore and discover the bewitching appeal of dark literature at your local bookstore or library. Thank you, kind listeners, for joining us. And until next time, be sure to mind the shadows.